Okay, let's stand for the introductory scripture. It's 2 Timothy chapter 3, verses 3 through 5. But understand this, in the last days, terrible times will come. For men will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money, boastful, arrogant, abusive, disobedient to their parents, ungrateful, unholy, unloving, unforgiving, slanderous, without self-control, brutal, without love of good, traitorous, reckless, conceited, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God, having a form of godliness but denying its power. Turn away from such as these. You may be seated. The Race Trader Blossoms, Part 2.
Well, good morning, y'all. Well, let's start with a word study. And I don't know if you could really see it in the projection here, but I have in bold unholy and traitorous. And those are key words that we're going to look at now. And when those two words are combined, it constitutes the race traitor. Well, the opposite of unholy is holy, of course. And the Greek word for holy, as in holy nation in 1 Peter 2:9, is hagios, number 40, and physically means pure. The Greek word for unholy is aniosis, number 462, and the Judeo church has deracinated or removed the racial import and just given it an implied generic meaning of impious or wicked. Well, what these impious race traders in churchianity ignore in the same Strong's Concordance citation is a reference to number 3741, which is the Greek word hosios, which says reverence for what should be hallowed properly, utter disregard of what is sacred. That is, willful or arrogant disrespect of the things of God. End quote. Christ told Peter, "Get behind me, Satan. You are a stumbling block to me because you are not thinking about the things of God, but the things of man." In other words, the things of man, which have an utter disregard for the things of God, are satanic. And they affect us adversely. You are an adversary or Satan of God if you're a traitor to Israel. Because the people of God are the things of God that matter the most. Things have a cause and effect, blessings and curses. So naturally, the race traitor curses us. And that's what Paul is warning us about. That is, when the treason against true Israel happens, there will be terrible times. And they may be pious, having a form of godliness but denying its power, but in reality, they are unholy and traitorous. If God created Adamic man as a holy people or race, then the race traitor has a complete disregard for the things of God. In another associated word trickery, the King James renders Hebrews 10:29 as, "Of how much sore punishment, suppose ye, shall he be thought worthy, who hath trodden under foot the Son of God, and hath counted the blood of the covenant wherewith he was sanctified an unholy thing, and hath done despite unto the Spirit of grace." The Greek word for unholy here is koinos, number 2839, meaning common, shared, or the Hebraistic use as found in the Septuagint, profane, dirty, unclean, unwashed, unquote. Greek scholar William Fink says, quote, "Regarding something as common in this sense refers to something which is defiled because it was treated profanely, or for the common use of something which was intended for holy use. The differences between something common, which can be sanctified, and something which the law considers unclean is something which never can be cleansed." Look at how much filth Billy Graham has on his hands when he told people in the 1950s, quote, "The Bible doesn't prohibit interracial marriage or say that a person must only marry from his or her own racial or ethnic group. The Bible reminds us that God, from one man, made every nation of men. The Bible gives us no grounds for saying that one race is superior or inferior to any other race. We are all made in the image of God, and Christ came to purchase men for God from every tribe and language and people and nation," end quote. Now, Graham is advocating the soiling of the white race through adulteration. "Thou shalt not adulterate" is the proper rendering of Exodus 20:14, not "Thou shalt not commit adultery," and it means genetic dilution. Once a mongrel is born, when the clean is mixed with the unclean, it can never be cleansed. It can never be holy. And that's why it was so important as to be one of the Ten Commandments. Graham lied, having a wholesale disregard for the things of God. And the people became more enamored with Graham, the liar, than the word of truth. In a generation, the churches of America had no love for the truth, that they might be saved from all of the curses that were cascading upon them. A survey released last week indicates that white Christians are no longer a majority population in the United States, as the alien invasion has dramatically shifted the nation's demographics from 8 in 10 Americans that were white Christians 40 years ago to the present statistic of 43% of the population. Quote, "Now there were also false prophets among the people, as even among you there shall be false teachers who introduce destructive systems of philosophy, even denying the master who has brought them, bringing upon themselves quick destruction. And many shall follow in their licentiousness, because of whom the way of truth shall be blasphemed, and with greediness they shall make profit from you with fictitious words. For whom from of old their judgment is not idle and their destruction does not sleep. 2 Peter 2, verses 1 through 3. That was quoted from the Christogenia New Testament. And their children, the baby boomers, us, were damned and had pleasure in the unrighteousness of race mixing. And for this cause, God sent them strong delusion that they should believe a lie. My generation believed the Satans and the things of man. God intended to use a holy people for holy purposes. Billy Graham was the progenitor of the greatest magnitude for millions of race traitors propagating an unholy breed of Antichrist. Ezekiel brought the command to those ministering to the people to keep them from pollutions, both strangers and their strange gods. They shall teach my people the difference between the holy and the common, and cause them to discern between the unclean and the clean. This is concentrating on the difference between the white race and mongrels, not kosher foods. Needless to say, between racist and race traitors. Paul implores us to turn away or avoid the unholy traitors of the white race. And here's the reason. They are the kind who worm their way into households and captivate vulnerable women who are weighed down with sins and led astray by various passions. Always learning but never able to come to a knowledge of the truth. Just as Jannes and Jambres opposed Moses, so also these men oppose the truth. They are corrupted in mind and disqualified from the faith. But they will not advance much further. For just like Jannes and Jambres, their folly will be plain to everyone. 2 Timothy 3, verses 6 through 9. So, who were Jannes and Jambres? Well, they were the Egyptian court magicians of Pharaoh, who called them wise men and sorcerers, trying to rival the miracles of Moses. Now, Paul just called them fools, from the word folly, which means foolishness, with corrupt minds, having resisted the truths Moses brought forth. And yet some people to this day believe that occult enchanters like the ancient Penn and Teller stage act could actually manifest supernatural phenomenon. Illusionist have always been con artists, because if they resist the truth and love the lie, God says he will send them strong delusion. What is delusion? It is an erroneous belief that is held in the face of evidence to the contrary. I have evidence that there is only one supernatural God. I am the Lord, and there is none else. There is no God besides me. Isaiah 45:5. A God must have known that his adversaries would be the corrupted minds of Adam kind. Otherwise, he would not have made the very first commandment to the effect that you shall have no other gods before me. False deities worm their way into the hearts and minds of our women, and the race traitor blossoms. In 2017, race mixing is epidemic, and the illusion is that all is well. Good job, magicians. However, they did so with their enchantments of divination, which is not to say supernatural gifts from the Egyptian small g gods, because the God of Israel says there is no such thing. Ancient records survive and reveal the secrets of the mystery religion of Egypt. The pulpit commentary states, quote, "On the whole, we regard it as most probable that the Egyptian magicians of this time were jugglers of a high class, well skilled in serpent charming, or what we call snake charmers, and other kindred arts, but not possessed of any supernatural powers. The magicians of Egypt did in like manner with their enchantments. The magicians, aware of the wonder which would probably be wrought from Moses, had prepared themselves. They had brought serpents or snakes charmed and stiffened so as to look like rods, which was a common trick in Egypt, and in their hands. And when Aaron's rod became a serpent, they threw their stiffened snakes upon the ground and disenchanted them so that they were seen to be what they were, snakes, and not really rods. The modern snake charmers employ the equivalent of enchantments with Marxist dialectics. The miraculous notion that non-whites are just the same as white people can only be believed with a corrupted mind that is resisting racism and white supremacy and all of the other buzzwords that are nonsensical in nature, but belie the impact that the white race has had upon history. In part one, we discussed the thesis of the alt-left, or Antifa's, anti-fascist, and today we will address the antithesis of the alt-right, or secular white nationalism, especially as it relates to Charlottesville and the rally to unite the right. The rally, or protestation of removing a heroic monument dedicated to General Robert E. Lee, was a fiasco and meant to be counterproductive. The magicians always plan their illusions in advance. What? You thought the Patriot Act was just whipped up in the aftermath of 9/11? No, it was in the works 2 years before the inside job. And so we should not believe the official storyline that despicable media whores tell us about Charlottesville. On the morning of August 12th, 2017, I didn't think there would be much mainstream coverage from the usual news outlets, but boy, was I wrong. It was an all-day affair, all weekend, and all the networks were pumping the same script. Today's scripture reading epitomizes the mindset of both the alt-left and the alt-right, the thesis and antithesis, because both were spiritually lobotomized during 12 years of secular humanism in the gulags of public education. Now, the synthesis, the end result of all this, is a crop of race traitors who are ungrateful, unloving, and unforgiving. If a generation cannot love good, they cannot love the truth. If they cannot love the truth, they are delusional. That's one reason why Christian Identity encourages homeschooling. I wondered why the network news channels were covering this one event more than previous protests against Confederate memorials. And there's been plenty of them. The answer is that somebody was going to die. Maybe. And they knew it in advance. Everything was choreographed to convey the same thing. Racism bad, anti-racism good. It was another false flag, and the proof is that the media dedicated the entire weekend news to falsely accuse the violence on the non-violent. The staged car crashing into the crowd was the needed stimulant to fill in the narrative pre-written for public consumption. Now, I'm not going to write a book about this in a sermon or provide endless photos. They're already out there. But I can tell you that I've spent hours tracking down the truth to ascertain what really happened, and I'm still not quite sure. And I want to present a reasonable storyline to show that we've been lied to again. In part one, we exposed Antifa and related groups as either radicalized communists or useful idiots. We will do the same thing now with the Unite the Right participants. It should be understood from the get-go that there never was any effort to unite anybody on the far right. It was a meaningless rally title. In fact, there were two camps which were comprised of alt-right memes that embrace a little green frog as their mascot, accepting Jews and sodomites into their ranks. And then there were Christian nationalists who are not ashamed of the racist tag. In fact, the alt-right organizers were embarrassed or repulsed by uncompromising moral Christians who were there. These two groups were physically separated from each other before the rally commenced at the Robert E. Lee Park. The rally organizers had permits, which were revoked by the city of Charlottesville, while two other opposition permits of the alt-left were allowed to stand. The mayor of Charlottesville is Jewish, and the vice mayor is a Negro who is associated with Black Panthers, Black Lives Matter, and other radical black groups. But it took a federal judge to intervene and grant the alt-right their First Amendment rights to assemble. That is, until the state of Virginia, at the behest of Governor Terry McAuliffe, a longtime Clinton bagman and all-around race traitor, declared a state of emergency just before the event was to begin at high noon. As alt-right members walked into Lee Park that morning, Antifa and Black Lives Matter of the alt-left instigated violence, and brawls ensued for hours without any police presence. From previous encounters, both sides came with body armor and makeshift weapons. I even saw one Negro with an aerosol can that was used as a flamethrower. The streets became bloody as planned. The network news kept playing the same scenes of violence over and over, blaming it all on the Nazis and or white supremacists. There was no mention of free speech or freedom of assembly. Both sides employed pepper spray and the police did nothing. That's because the police were given stand-down orders from their superiors, who were clearly sympathetic to Antifa, anarchist, and communist agitators. The liberal governor issued a statement at 11:28 stating, "I am disgusted by the hatred, bigotry, and violence these protesters have brought to our state over the past 24 hours. The actions I have taken are intended to assist the local government and restore public safety," end quote. Well, the media amplified the culprits inciting violence as the alt-right and all of the hate groups that sided with them. This carefully crafted hysteria by the media would culminate with a death. Maybe. The alt-right in the park were declared an unlawful assembly. We were fortunate to have Christian identity representation at the event with Bill and Melissa Fink, who coordinated with about 400 mostly white Christians, primarily League of the South, Traditional Workers' Party, and Identity Europa, with the slogan, "You will not replace us," meaning Europe or America would not be replaced by non-white aliens. And they were in a parking garage around 10 a.m. and embarked on a 3-block march to the park. Well, Bill made some observations about what they experienced and said, quote, "About halfway there, we came to a halt, but we could not even look to see what was going on at the front of the column. In several locations along the way, there were dense crowds of people, if I must call them people, on either side of us, taunting us with verbal abuse and provoking us. And while we engaged sporadically with a few of them, for the most part, most of us retained our composure. They did not even know us or anything about us, but they did not want us in Charlottesville. And in fact, to hear most of them chanting and yelling, they did not even want us to live. In their indoctrinated world, anyone in opposition to their Marxist globalist agenda has no right to live. The cries for tolerance are rapidly fading into the 80s and 90s as the leftists think that they have now an advantage. 5 days before the event, on August 7th, League of the South President Dr. Michael Hill issued an official declaration to all of its members, which carefully and explicitly instructed them to obey the authorities, to obey the local laws, to respect both public and private property, not to instigate violence verbally, and not to engage in violence except in self-defense. This was only a repeat of the League's general policies and served as a reminder to the membership in the buildup of rumors and excitement leading up to the event. From everything I observed, I noticed no departure from any of these instructions by any league member, or even by any of the members of the other groups that were with us that day. While there was a minority of Negro, Jewish, Latino, and Oriental faces in the crowd, sadly, a majority of the counter-demonstrators were at least apparently white. Among the sea of white faces were a mixture of sodomites, lesbians, black supremacists, and violent Negro thugs, mud sharks, hippies, and other assorted social justice warriors. From the looks of most of them, it seemed that the predominant blood type must have been HIV positive. Groups of young and apparently white women were holding signs and chanting Black Lives Matter, as if that were really even relevant to the reasons why we were there. Many others held placards containing stale Marxist slogans or even promoting sodomy. Some of them were yelling right in our faces, obviously attempting to provoke us, and it took much fortitude to resist the temptation of violent outburst. There were no police or barricades along the route immediately leading to the entrance to the park. There was no police presence in the blocks directly in front of the park, so we tolerated their vitriol at arm's length until we were finally able to proceed into the park itself. Only later did we learn that the vanguard of our group had to resort to fighting in the streets because the opposing leftists wanted to actually prevent us from gaining passage to proceed into the park. The streets at the south end of Lee Park were crammed with these counter-demonstrators, and many of them indeed were quite violent. However, after the initial skirmishes, in the words of Dr. Michael Hill, who was at the very front of our group, the throngs of the opposition had parted like the Red Sea, and the rest of our column marched into the park with little physical resistance, although there was continuous verbal abuse and provocation. Marching defiantly through the hostile mob, we filed into the southeast corner of the park with barricades on three sides and the mob at our rear. The alt-right crowd on the other side of the barricades that divided us seemed to be almost equal to us in numbers. Once we were all inside of Lee Park, in very short time, Antifa and black supremacist agitators began hurling missiles and randomly pepper spraying any one of us they could reach. So basically, the police allowed counter-demonstrators to break the law, shut down the traffic in the streets, and openly commit felony assaults with impunity. Not once did we observe the police even attempting to check the violence coming from the counter-demonstrators. Once we were all assembled in the park, our original purpose for being there seemed to be quickly forgotten, and the counter-demonstrators became the main object of our concern. For nearly an hour, the degenerate leftists hurled into the park missiles of stones, bricks, feces, and balloons filled with urine. One male Negro had been using some sort of flamethrower, evidently an aerosol of some sort, and many others were pepper spraying demonstrators inside the park or those of us who assumed the task of guarding our perimeter. During this time, The police merely stood by and watched as the mob outside the park committed every possible crime against us. My wife and I observed one policeman assigned to guard the barricades to our rear, pointing and laughing at one of our men, a man who was agonizing on the ground from the results of a face full of pepper spray. We helped to attend to several such men, dousing their face with milk or milk of magnesia, which seemed to be the most effective way of treatment that was readily accessible, and for which some of those among us have prepared in advance. Under these circumstances, right from the beginning, it was impossible for the rally to proceed. This went on unceasingly for about an hour. Finally, the police started to become alarmed only when some of us from within the park began to hurl the mob's own missiles back at them. A can of tear gas was launched by the leftists, but it failed to reach inside the park. And when the wind blew the gas back into the face of the mob in the streets, the police began behind us to announce that our rally was an illegal assembly and that we had to either disperse or be arrested. Around the same time, we first noticed a helicopter circling overhead. This was a clear case of police collusion with the leftist agitators who intended on denying our rights to assemble and to speak freely. Bill then describes their retreat and how their numbers have been split up, with one group going to another park and the rest going back to the parking garage. And I imagine I was watching that day and I could see that there were many more smaller groups that really didn't know where they were going and were just meandering around. They had vans picking up members who got lost in the melee. Carloads, at the same time, of black thugs were stalking and taunting these white marchers, hoping to find a stray and beat them to a pulp, Reginald Denny style, if you remember the LA riots. Bill and Melissa were spotted by their driver and then took them out of harm's way and back to their hotel. They turned on the TV for local reporting and heard nothing but lies, which I was hearing all morning. And I too was watching TV that Saturday and could tell that the media was going way overboard, vilifying anyone involved with the Unite the Right rally, while the real perpetrators of violence were hardly mentioned at all. How could the police and government officials collude so openly with communist violence, anarchy, vandalism, and sodomite perversion? They did so because they are communists themselves, at least state of mind communist, and simply exploited Antifa elements as their cannon fodder. Much in the same way common street criminals wreaked havoc in Germany before Hitler. Charlottesville is being milked for one big race traitor fest. At 1:19, Trump tweets, "We all must be united and condemn all that hate stands for. There is no place for this kind of violence in America. Let's come together as one," end quote. Well, this soundbite came into play during Hurricane Harvey with the media mantra of a miracle working together. The conspiracy thickens with an alleged vehicular homicide and helicopter crash. At 1:40 p.m., a Dodge Charger, quote, plows into a crowd of people. That phrase was repeated over and over again. That was the phrase all weekend, which turned out to be untrue. The car hit two other vehicles, and the chain reaction killed Heather Hare, maybe. At 5 p.m., two policemen were killed when their helicopter crashed as they were responding to the day's events. They were filming the incident with the Dodge Charger and were ordered by the governor to fly over his motorcade. White supremacists did not bring down that chopper, but I bet the governor may know who did. At 9:46 p.m., the police announced the arrest. Now, why did it take so long? The arrest of 20-year-old James Fields of Ohio, charging him with second-degree murder in the car ramming incident. Because of the still photos and videos captured during the car ramming incident, the meme, two cars, two drivers, and two cuts, should go viral. By two cuts, I mean as in movie making. After poring over every scrap of evidence I could find, I can only conclude that Charlottesville was a false flag operation and that the car ramming was staged. Although there are many variables, the discrepancies far outweigh the media version to fit an agenda, which pundits were more than happy to sing the same song. All race traitors made a joyful noise unto Satan. In the media's sloppy haste to condemn the white race, the staged area was blockaded. It was blockaded so that some hapless person wouldn't mess up their filming. There were approximately 200 crisis actors, some of whom can be seen in different locations for the same scene. Did you know that there's a company called Crowds on Demand who advertised for actors on Craigslist a week before Charlottesville and paid $25 an hour? Their website claims they provide our clients with protest, rallies, flash mobs, paparazzi events, and other inventive PR stunts, end quote. Which begs the question, if their cause was so worthy of protest, why would they need to pay people to show up? Would they have done business also with the alt-right? I doubt it. The media, in their quickie proof that some white supremacists did the dirty deed, showed a Dodge Charger in one scene with a sunroof and racing stripe down the middle, and in another scene without the distinctive features. That is probably because in the first take, the car was damaged or was just a practice run in which burnt tire tracks could be seen in the second take. They needed James Fields' car to make him the patsy. In fact, the car was attacked before it ever hit any person or actor on the street. And the official footage has the Charger ramming a white car and a purple van, which they say killed the victim in a chain reaction. Whereas there is other footage in which the white and purple vehicles disappear. Nowhere to be seen at all. Obviously, two takes spliced together for the propaganda short. The so-called victim was never hit by anything. Her mother told NBC that her daughter died of a heart attack. Thus, she was not killed. The media has been portraying Heather Heyer as an attractive teenager, as you can see in the photo on the right. However, they pulled another Trayvon switcheroo. Remember that? He was a cute little Negro boy, whereas in reality, he was a gangbanger 10 years later. So they didn't show what she looked like 20 years later as a 250-pound slob who was photographed that day holding a pack of cigarettes. What were the odds of a heart attack when you're a morbidly obese smoker walking around in 90-degree temperatures? Any information about her death or even an autopsy is unavailable. At a memorial service, her mother showed no signs of mourning, but rather stuck to the script of left-wing politics, her daughter becoming a martyr for Antifa and Black Lives Matter. She spoke as if at a Bolshevik convention, saying, quote, "She was very kind, generous person, and someone that actually was very opinionated and spoke up for what she believed was right," end quote. But she wasn't generous enough for other people to have their opinions or what they believed is right. She allied herself with violent commies who had no compunctions to kill somebody as a divine destiny would have it. She, Heather Heyer, croaked of natural causes. She may not have died at all, but the much-needed death certainly enhanced the national narrative to suppress white people who are fed up with false flags and Marxist dialectics, like mother, like daughter, race traitors. James A. Fields, is a 20-year-old enigma who is purportedly suffering from schizophrenia, which almost always demands antipsychotic medications. Why are there so many of these types? There are photos of a man driving the Charger, and it wasn't Fields. But weirdly enough, 32-year-old James G. Fields. It was a Fields, but not the 20-year-old Fields. The 20-year-old's mother is Samantha Bloom. There's our Bloom in the hymnal. Also known as Samantha Meyer. A Jewish name, perhaps? Thus, his name could be James Bloom. From recent videos, his license plate number and his mother's is GVF 1111 and GVF 1122, respectively. That may mean nothing, but a known anti-Trump Antifa supporter by the name of Vang He Lu alleges that his father was the previous car's owner admittedly, this all sounds far-fetched, until you realize that the dissemination of disinformation is a standard pattern of false flag operations. He was allegedly with the group Vanguard America, who released a statement saying he, Fields, the 20-year-old, was not an official member. Their uniform is khaki pants and a white polo shirt, which anybody can quickly assume the Vanguard America identity. The patsy, Fields, was tried, convicted, and executed by the gods of media. He will never get a fair trial, and we will never hear from him. He could be like so many other MK Ultras before him. Let's look at one more coincidence, that magnifies the entire plot as going beyond the threshold of credibility. The convenient eyewitness who shot the video of Fields' car plowing into the crowd of counter-protesters, or were they paid actors, or even mercenaries, this blocked-off area for wagging the dog had no white supremacist anywhere near them because it was a staging area for documenting some kind of vehicular assault, which went awry with Heather's heart attack. And so they just amalgamated her alleged demise into the script. The video guy said he had been filming conflicts erupting all day, and yet now was in a non-conflict area to film what? As I was surfing between CNN, Fox, and MSNBC, this leftist videographer just so happened to be a convenient witness, in which witnessing can be a profession. The professional witness, as he was the instant star of cable news networks, definitely had his ducks in a row that day, and perhaps was a little too good to be true. The truth is, Brennan Gilmore, that's his name, who coincidentally happened to be at the right place at the right time, was the all-too-perfect mouthpiece to interview for the dark agenda of the deep state. He carefully crafted his words depicting the charger as, quote, an act of deliberate terrorism, and quoted in the New York Times as saying, quote, the violence and hatred in our society is out of control. We like to think that it's better than places like Africa and Asia, but it's not, said Mr. Gilmore, who worked in Africa as a U.S. State Department under the reign of Hillary, their Foreign Service officer, before leaving to manage the campaign of Tom Perriello, who we'll get to in a moment. Well, Foreign Service officer, that's sanitized lingo for a CIA PSYOP guy who specialized in supervising special forces doing dirty tricks. And he was part of an operation allowing Obama to send in troops to quash any local resistance to Joseph Kony. And there's a picture of him, a self-proclaimed black African guerrilla leader, a spokesman of God, and spirit medium, according to Wikipedia. I think I saw him at Charlottesville. Gilmore and his pal, Perriello, are both committed globalists. That's code for communist race traitors. In his bid for governor, Perriello hauled in $2.2 million, including $385,000 from billionaire George Soros, a major liberal donor viewed by the right as a shadowy benefactor behind a wide variety of left-wing causes, such as the Center for American Progress, a liberal think tank where Perriello worked for after leaving Congress. Gilmore and Antifa have something in common, the common love of money. Their unholy motivations can never be cleansed. Turn away from such as these. Likewise, turn away from godless alt-right actors. I find it incredible that the organizer for Unite the Right has been in the movement for less than a year and was able to draw a couple thousand white people to Charlottesville. The so-called white supremacist leader, Jason Kessler, was a longtime supporter of Barry Sotero, who we know as Barack Obama, and a rabid Occupy Wall Street activist working for CNN as an on-site correspondent, which CNN is now furiously scrubbing their archives, dumping him down the memory hole. Are we to believe that he became a born-again racist around November of 2016? According to a self-identified alt-right activist and organizer, Eli Mosley, a former roommate of Jason Kessler, says Kessler is a failed pothead who reinvented himself as a white supremacist, but his grandmother's name is Goldberg, which makes him Jewish. I've said on numerous occasions that I believe the alt-right is a Jewish invention. In an interview with David Duke, he was asked about Kessler, and Duke says, "Oh, I know him, he's okay." When the alt-right was kicked out of Lee Park, Duke and his entourage had their getaway car waiting for a quick exit. In a video, Duke is sitting in the back seat next to alt-right leader Mike Enoch, a self-admitted Jew. I'm glad Bill Fink attended the event to give us his personal observations. We are in agreement with Bill's conclusions that the establishment wanted to document violence from the neo-Nazis and Klansmen, but they did not feed the serpents. They wanted to see the left clobber the right, but white men stood their ground in self-defense mode. They wanted us to take drastic measures to make us look bad, and they failed. And they were livid with their own failures. They wanted to prove our character defects, but found none. They wanted to see rivers of blood, but only a trickle. Bill rightly stated, "We prevailed over the forces of evil because we ourselves did not succumb to the evil." So they failed miserably, and the mainstream media went on to report as fact what they had hoped to see. But it is not what they saw, and quite shamelessly they broadcast their lies in spite of the actual facts. I believe the last days and terrible times are here. It's as if we are witnesses to an extraordinary blossom of race traitors, if we can discern the dialectic. Isaiah sets forth the woes of Israel. Quote, they take the bribes to let the wicked go free. They punish the innocent. Therefore, as fire devours the stubble and the flame consumes the chaff, so their root shall be rottenness, and their blossom shall go up as dust, because they have cast away the law of the Lord of hosts and despised the word of the Holy One of Israel. Even if the protocols of 1869 were fake, they are now fully developed. They fully blossomed. And we have reiterations of the same thing as proof, not fake, that they have a plan for world conquest. The fatal discourse of Rabbi Reichhorn, who was one of the participants in 1869, was published in the French newspaper La Vieille France in 1920 and 21. I'm going to read some excerpts, which are just astounding, which affect us today. It said, every 100 years, we, the sages of Israel, have been accustomed to meet in Sanhedrin in order to examine our progress towards the dominion or the domination of the world which Jehovah has promised us and our conquest over the enemy, Christianity. God always has been and always will be the irresistible power. Handled by expert hands, it will always be the most useful lever for those who possess it, and the object of envy for those who do not. With gold, we can buy the most rebellious consciences, can fix the rate of all values, the current price of all products, can subsidize all state loans, and thereafter hold the states at our mercy. Continuing to quote the fatal discourse of Rabbi Reichhorn, the other great power is the press. By repeating without cessation certain ideas, the press succeeds in the end in having them accepted as actualities. The theater renders us analogous services. Everywhere the press and the theater obey our orders. In this manner, we shall prepare revolutions, which the Christians will make themselves, and of which we shall reap the fruit. By our mockeries and our attacks upon them, we shall make their priest ridiculous, then odious, and their religion as ridiculous and as odious as their clergy. Then we shall be masters of their souls. But above all, let us monopolize education. By this means, we spread ideas that are useful to us and shape the children's brains as suits us. Let us care not to hinder the marriage of our men, meaning Jews, with Christian girls. For through them we shall get our foot into the mostly closed, locked circles. And the last one's a doozy. At the wished for hour, fixed in advance, we shall let loose the revolution, which by ruining all classes of Christianity will definitely enslave the Christian to us. Thus will be accomplished the promise Jehovah made to his people. End quote. They may think that they will win in the end, but the Bible says they will be destroyed. For thus says the Lord of hosts, once more, in a little while, I am going to shake the heavens and the earth, the sea also and the dry land, and I will shake all nations, so that the treasures of all nations shall come in, and I will fill this house with glory, says the Lord of hosts. Haggai, chapter 2, verses 6 and 7. God lays claim to all the gold and silver, which he created, and therefore owns. As a 0.5 hurricane roars over Florida today, which is said to be the greatest ever, and may be, the Jews who think they have godlike powers to weaponize weather, God is telling his people to stand your ground on a solid faith. You can run, but you can't hide from the wrath of God. Churches are going to be shaken to their foundations. I pray this message gives you a better understanding of the solid rock whereby we stand in this time of chaos and shaking. The new covenant, as with all previous covenants, were made with the same race of people. But the new covenant is our protection and the only white power that can never be shaken. Let go of the world and be transformed by the renewing of your mind to prove what is the good and perfect will of God. Therefore, because we have received the kingdom that is not shaken, we shall receive grace, by which we shall serve and please God in reverence and in awe. Thank you.